Welcome to Hormone Health Podcast. We're Chloe and Georgia, your go-to naturopaths for all things hormones.
Thank you for joining us as we dive into the latest research, chat with top experts, and hear lived experiences from people just like you.
Science, stories, maybe a bit of swearing, but straight up hormone chat.
Let's get into it.
Today we are joining you on a collective amount of maybe 4 hours of sleep last night.
Oh, don't even know.
What happened? Can we blame the moon?
I don't think so, because often that's my first thought.
Your mum even said in the kitchen, she's like, what's the moon doing? I was like, I don't know. But
unless there's downsides to each moon phase, I always think full moon stuff, but it's not a full moon. Lottie is teething. You can see it, which is annoying me. I kind of just want to pull it down a little bit. But there's that. And then Otto had like runny nose, cough, just like standard cold. He's been pretty good though. Like it's 36, 48 hour situation for him. And Rumi randomly vomited at 9 p.m. all through the bed. So there's
last night.
The night before. Yeah, so there's something fermenting in my house.
And it's not sourdough.
Well, that is, except my last loaf was a bit flat, so I need to feed the starter. But I don't know. And then last night, Lottie just every 20 minutes would wake up crying, and then I would just breastfeed her back to sleep. I got so hungry, though, and thirsty that I had to get up in the middle of the night and eat something because I was like, there's nothing left.
I thought that I was going to have my sob story of being like, I'll come over here and tell you that Olive was awake from 3 till 4:30, and you're like, I was up every 20 minutes. Not that it's a competition, but it's like, oh, these girls.
I feel like that's almost harder though when they wake up and they're wide awake, because you kind of have to wait for the next sleep cycle. You know what I mean?
Like, she was ready to kick off. Really? She's like, I'm ready to read
a book.
Did
she go to bed? Oh my god, can she read?
Chapter 3, Philosopher's Stone. She just was ready to start the day at 3 o'clock. So, you know, it's That's how do you hard. Fight that?
You can't. It's really hard. So did she go back to sleep?
Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the magpies were up.
Yes. Amazing. Morning.
The morning. We're here. So, you know, it's just one of those nights. Tonight's our night.
Surely.
Yeah. Okay.
Surely, 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 surely.
So today's episode, I was trying to think on the way here of like a catchy title for this episode. Come up with bite-sized pod. Oh, for fuck's sake.
I hope you keep that in.
Bite-sized protein episode.
Oh, so catchy, Chloe. How do you come up with these names? You know what? I should introduce you to ChatGPT.
Mate. ChatGPT and me, we're going to run off.
Every time Georgie and I talk about something, she's like instantly chat. She's got the app ready to go. So it's whenever we have like a marketing meeting, it's always me, Georgie, and Chatty G. We call her Chatty G. See how I mean?
The three G's.
The three G's.
ChatGPT is a woman. So today we are talking about protein because I think it's an assumption for us that our clients will know what protein is, how much protein they need to eat. You know, it's not good enough to say, I want you to eat, you know, 25 grams of protein per meal. What does that actually mean? I think protein is quite nuanced in terms of what it actually does in the body. Where do you get it from food? What does that actually look like? And how much protein is actually in food?
Yeah, which is a good point, because I think it was last week you and I were talking about a client you spoke with who thought that 20 grams of chicken meant 20 grams of protein from the chicken.
Yeah. And it's like, that's nothing, you know, in terms of the weight of 20 grams of chicken does not equal 20 grams of protein.
Yes. So it can get confusing, but it doesn't have to. So this podcast is all about protein. So a real deep dive, which is a great one to share with anyone you know.
So I think, you know, a good way to start this off is talking about what is protein. And again, I was having a big think on the drive here about how we assume that protein, or very much, you know, when people talk about protein, it's like protein shakes, protein equals muscle mass. You know, you've got to have your protein in a shake. You've got to drink it. And that's, you do that after exercise. There's so much more to protein than just protein powder, protein powder, protein power, and muscles.
Mm.
And so when we sort of think about protein, if I can break it down, protein is a complex molecule made up of chains of amino acids. Now, amino acids, they're essentially the building blocks of life. And that is a big statement. And it's, you know, it's a big statement because it's big, you know, that's what it means. Protein makes up our tissue. It makes up our muscle. It supports our immune system. It provides us energy, produces hormones and enzymes, transports oxygen and nutrients throughout the body. When we need to have enough protein every single day to support these processes in our body. When we're thinking about protein as well, protein also keeps us full. It regulates our blood sugar levels. So these are some short-term actions that protein provides us every single day. But eating enough protein every single day also supports our longevity, our long-term health. Now, when we sort of think about protein, like I said before, is broken up into different amino acids. There's 20 different amino acids, but 9 of those are essential to our body, meaning that we need to have them every single day from foods that we eat because we can't generate them or make them up in our body ourselves, like our other non-essential amino acids. Now, typically animal protein is going to be what we call, quote unquote, a complete protein because it will contain all of those 9 essential amino acids. However, vegetarian sources of protein, they can be incomplete protein because they're not always going to have all of the 9 essential amino acids. They may contain 5 of the essential amino acids. So when, and for our vegetarians and vegans or people who are predominantly plant-based, when we talk about vegetarian sources of protein, you want to mix those, you know, soy mixed with quinoa, mixed with all those things to make sure that you're getting all of those 9 essential amino acids. When we're talking about protein intake, there's an analogy that I like to use, and I talk about this analogy to my clients as well. So protein intake, we need to think about it almost like we are trying to complete a protein puzzle every single day. Now, every single meal that we eat is going to be a different types of puzzle pieces. Now, at the end of that day, we should have enough puzzle pieces to complete our protein puzzle. However, if we're not eating the right foods or we're not eating enough of this protein, at the end of the day, our protein puzzle is incomplete. Then basically what happens is that you're starting every single day with incomplete puzzle and you're not able to have those processes met with consuming enough protein. And so again, this podcast is going to be talking about how to actually reach your protein intake per day. And we can talk about how much protein you need individually. And so if we're basing it off the guides here, generally for a general person, maybe with a sedentary lifestyle, the recommendation is around 0.8 grams per body kilo. But really what we want to aim for here and what Georgia and I recommend and our team at Hormone Health Studio do recommend to our clients is really aiming for that 1.5 grams per body kilo of protein per day. Would you say that that's what you say as well?
Yeah. So what that really simply means is whatever your body kilo is, roughly, say you weigh 70 kilos, times that by 1.5, and that's the total amount of protein that you want to be having in a day.
Of course, this can depend on your activity level. So if you are strength training, if you are running a marathon, you know, if you have different requirements, that can sort of change. But really, as a sort of reference range, we say
one gram to 1.5 grams of protein per kilo of body weight. And you'll notice it once you start hitting that higher protein requirement, and this goes back to your puzzle piece analogy, when you complete your daily puzzle of protein, you'll feel it. Your immune system will be supported. Your neurotransmitters will be supported. You'll have a better stress response, better energy, better mood. You'll sleep better. You'll be able to stabilize your blood sugar levels. Hormonally, you just operate better.
And we know that if you are experiencing dysregulated blood sugar levels, it can basically mimic anxiety. You feel those feelings of your body just needs food. If you're having a dip in your blood sugar level, you can feel that your tolerance is reduced. It kicks off this cascade of symptoms. Now, for me, I will ask my clients, you know, to ascertain whether or not they are getting enough protein in their diet. A big red flag for not eating enough protein per day is going to be that mid-morning hunger. If a client says to me that they're experiencing this sort of ravenous sort of like feelings of low blood sugar, agitation, hunger in that mid-morning, it's like, okay, well, let's talk about what you've done for breakfast. What does your morning routine look like? And before I sort of go into that, I want to discuss the protein leverage hypothesis. And this is something that has been around for a bit, but essentially what it talks about is this theory in nutritional science that suggests that humans, as well as some animals, will prioritize their protein intake over other macronutrients such as carbohydrates and fats. So essentially what this is saying is that your dietary protein intake needs to be prioritized above those other macronutrients. And if not, then you'll continue to feel hunger, or you won't feel that satiety that you'll feel until your protein requirements are met. So for example, let's just say you have a bowl of neutral grain for breakfast, you know, not much protein in that. You're going to feel hungry in that mid-morning because your body's saying, okay, that was good. That met my comfort levels because, you know, tastes good. It's quick and easy. It's convenient. I've eaten something, but it doesn't stick with you until, say, lunchtime for most people, and depending on what you're doing in that morning as well. So what can happen is when we're talking about this protein leverage hypothesis is that this, if you're not eating enough protein, you get hungry in that mid-morning. And what tends to happen is that people will then overeat because they're trying to meet this protein requirement. And then, of course, this leads to overeating or grazing throughout the day because your body's trying to get that protein food. And in a westernized diet, high in ultra processed foods, they can tend to not have that same sort of ratio of protein.
Yeah. And we see this all the time. You often see people that say, I'm trying to shift weight or I'm trying to eat better. I don't have time and I just don't have any energy to do it. And if we simply make the change to what you're eating in the morning and swapping that from, say, a high carbohydrate meal to, you know, like toast with butter on it or peanut butter on it or cereal, to more of a high protein breakfast, maybe that's incorporating more animal products like eggs or, you know, whatever it is that we're doing to reach a protein of a morning, notice a difference and you'll feel it instantly and notice a difference in how much you reach for food for the rest of the day, knowing that protein can really stabilize your hunger.
The other component that I don't think we spoke about here was protein during pregnancy. The recommendations are that you have at least 25 grams above baseline of protein, which, like, in theory, excellent. Mm-hmm. I understand that your body in pregnancy requires more nutrients, but oh my God, trying to eat more, let alone trying to eat meat in that first trimester of pregnancy when everything's telling you that smells disgusting, that looks disgusting. Of course, I'm talking about, you know, my personal experience, but you tend to, you know, your intuition is just saying, I need simple. I need white food.
I need a kebab.
I need a kebab. I need a frozen curry. The baby wants it. Then it's just like how it can be really hard to sort of increase your protein requirements, especially during pregnancy.
Especially if you're experiencing nausea and vomiting or HG.
Mm-hmm. And so we, you know, again, there's going to be this concept that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And while I do agree with that, I think that breakfast can look different for different people in terms of the timing and depending on what your morning routine looks like. Even before we jumped on this call, we were talking about how, you know, it's not just the food. Of course, that's what we're talking about today, trying to get protein into you, but it's not just the foods that you're eating. It's also the environment in which you're eating. So We would much rather our clients sit down to a good high-protein meal, say at 9 a.m., as opposed to eating, you know, a piece of toast with jam first thing when they wake up.
Yeah, just because they feel like they need to have breakfast straight away because that's what we've been told. This is the thing about nutrition, is that you're going to get so many different ideas and theories and beliefs around good nutrition. Couple that with the fact that everybody has completely different biology, let alone hormonal cycles. And so it can be really confusing. But if you try just committing to eating a higher protein meals, notice a difference.
And so when we're thinking about different types of foods, I mentioned before that we can break protein up between animal protein and vegetarian sources of protein. Now, what I suggest is ideally aiming for 25 to 30 grams of protein per meal as a general guide. Of course, that's going to depend on, like we were saying before, on your activity levels and also on your weight. But usually that's sort of what we like to aim for in terms of breakfast.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah. And so what that can look like in terms of a breakfast, you know, and I can just sort of say something that I would eat is like whether it be two slices of toast, whether that be, you know, sourdough, but remembering that gluten itself is a protein. So gluten-free foods are going to be lower protein. You know, coming back to that nuance of around nutrition, it's like, well, we think we may be doing something better by eating, you know, gluten-free, but that taking away that gluten is taking away some of that protein. So toast, sourdough, like a high grain multi-bread. I like cottage cheese. I think that's a really good way to add extra protein. You know, you can do eggs with that as well. That's breakfast, or that sort of meal is really going to set your appetite cues up for the rest of the day. Some other things that we can think about is protein powder in porridges, protein powder in smoothies. You know, that can be a really convenient way to get more protein, whether that be a vegetarian source of protein or a whey-based protein as well. Especially when, in now that it is sort of getting cooler weather, we think, okay, back onto, you know, warmer breakfasts, porridges, things like that. They're great. They're a great way to increase your dietary fiber, but sometimes they can lack the protein element and be sort of higher carbohydrate.
Which I think, particularly for people who are waking up tired, aren't getting great sleep, have low energy or low mood, starting the day with, you know, maybe have your oats later in the day, but starting the day with that higher protein intake is just going to support your neurotransmitters incredibly.
And so when we were saying before, in terms of about what protein is, most food is going to have a balance of their macronutrients. Macronutrients are fats, proteins, carbohydrates. Now, let's talk about, for example, an egg. An egg is going to have around 6 grams of protein, but it also has fats in there from the egg yolk. And then it will also have smaller amounts of carbohydrates too. So when we think high protein foods, we think, okay, so what are the foods which have a ratio of higher protein in terms of their macronutrient ratios? And so other things that I was mentioning before in terms of vegetarian sources of protein, what we typically think about there is going to be foods such as soy. So one cup of, say, tofu can range between 15 to 20 grams of protein. I really like hemp seeds as well. They're, you know, a good sort of quick food that you can sprinkle over the top of, like I said, porridges, smoothies, toasts. 3 tablespoons of hemp seeds is around 9 grams of protein. Even lentils as well, one cup. So not, you know, you don't have to just be vegetarian to eat lentils. I put them through bolognese's. Is that the plural for bolognese's?
Bolognese's.
even things like peanut butter, you know, and nuts as well. Remembering that nuts and seeds are going to have a macronutrient balance of fats and proteins too. So it's really trying to manage. Or sometimes it will require you to look at the food labels and say, okay, so in one serve, how many grams of protein is you know, this food. I find that a really quick way to, you know, a quick sort of protein source is going to be yogurt, especially now that there's more on the market. Like those higher protein yogurts are really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, obviously we've just mentioned some high protein meal ideas, particularly for breakfast. And we mentioned toast, even though we had said, you know, don't start your morning with toast. But really what we're saying is it's about getting the ratio right. Obviously, we still need carbohydrates, particularly if you have a hormonal cycle. Is that how you want me to say that? If you go too low in your carbohydrates, it messes with your hormones. You can lose your period. It affects ovulation, affects fertility. So we need carbohydrates, but we just want to make sure that we're getting a good dose of protein alongside that. So for example, if you just put, say, a tablespoon of peanut butter on toast, that's only going to give you around 4 grams of protein from the peanut butter, depending on what type of bread you have. Quite low. Again, we're thinking as a minimum 25 to 30 grams of protein. So instead of doing peanut butter on toast, if you did 3 eggs on toast.
Girl loves her eggs.
Girl loves her eggs, honestly. And they're so expensive and hard to get right now. I need to get chickens. There's a meme that goes around that's like, if you've started making your sourdough, just be ready because the chickens are coming next.
The chickens are coming.
I feel like I can relate to that. It could be good for Otto then. But could you imagine?
Oh.
He'd be picking him up under his wing, throwing him around. When I was at my sister's place, there was a little chicken called Gus, and he would target Gus with the water gun, the poor thing.
Yeah, chickens are vulnerable. But I think of toast like the vessel. You know, it's toast, you know.
I think of myself as the vessel. Stephen calls me the vessel because that's what I've started calling myself. I said, I am the vessel of this family.
You and toast have a lot in common. Toast is the vessel in terms of what you're putting onto it. So it's like have your peanut butter toast, but then have, you know, some berries and some protein yogurt on the side. Mm. Or it's like if you really love your peanut butter toast or your Vegemite toast, it's like, okay, have it. And then it's like what you're doing to sort of, again, with that analogy, making sure that that meal has all the required puzzle pieces to meet your protein intake. And so, you know, it's can be hard at the start, but when you get a good idea around what constitutes that 25 to sort of 30 grams of protein per meal, then you can start to say, well, you'll actually feel it when you're not having enough.
And this is
why. Do you want to feel good?
And this is why I created the Feel Good Program. The Feel Good Program is an online self-paced 4-week program that we recently launched this year. And the whole premise around the Feel Good Program, I mean, I clearly wasn't very creative with the title of it because the whole thing was, I want people to feel good. I need to create a program to help them feel good. So this Feel Good Program, at the crux of it, is really about good nutrition, mostly making sure that you're hitting that high protein requirement. In the Feel Good Program, I give recommendations on how to calculate your personal calorie needs as well as your personal protein needs. So there's a couple of calculations there to get really specific on what you need as an individual. Obviously, in this podcast, we're talking pretty broadly about aiming for 25, 30 grams of protein per meal, but we can really get targeted in our approach. And the whole idea is that when you do this through food, one, you're going to improve your energy, but two, you can really start making way on getting the body that you're after, shifting some excess weight if you need to, or maintaining a healthy weight. That is the whole idea of the Feel Good Program, and that's why we created it. So in that program, there's stacks of videos and handouts, and there's a 70-page meal plan,
which I think is probably like the best part about it, because those meal plans, you can sort of say, well, you know, I could use this as sort of the base meal and then tweak it to your sort of personal preference.
Yes.
But this is, I feel people really need sort of some good sort of convenient food guides to say, well, okay, this is how you can incorporate protein this is how you can make a high protein meal.
Yes. And the way I structured each recipe was that it gives you a breakdown of how much protein, carbohydrates, fats, fiber, and calories is in that meal. So that once you know what targets you are trying to meet, you can simply pick the meals that are aligned with that. Plus, the meals are super easy. There's a lot of one-pan dishes. I am a mum of three who has like 20 minutes to pull a dinner together. So I've kind of pretended that everyone else is in that same situation and have made it really easy. And there's a lot of meals that have repeated or used as leftovers for lunch the next day just for ease. Because I think a lot of the time, particularly when it comes to weight, we can overcomplicate it.
Yeah, it's like we need to, you know, do all these things when in actual fact, making these slight tweaks and understanding the science around how the body best responds is that if, yeah, you know, you could, anyone can eat sort of low calorie, but that hunger, if you're not eating enough protein, coming back to that protein leverage hypothesis, is that it makes it impossible for you because you eat a low calorie meal by mid morning, you're absolutely starving. Of course, you're going to eat. Mm. And then you just kickstart that sort of blood sugar cascade. And so, yeah, I think the other thing to note here as well is weight loss. You know, we think about weight loss and again, if you want to make sure that your weight loss is coming from body fat, which rather than sort of muscle mass loss. Mm. So if you're not eating enough protein, you don't want to be reducing your muscle mass, which contributes to lower body weight. But in terms of it's not doing much for overall fat loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Also in the Feel Good program, while we're talking about it, I talk about the role of hormones when it comes to weight, insulin resistance, gut health, stress, sleep, mitochondrial function, other metabolic obstacles. Really, this program is to help you understand what metabolic obstacles are getting in your way and to help you overcome that so that you can improve your energy, improve your mood, feel good, shift weight. And it's great. It's amazing, if I might say so myself. There is nothing like it on the market.
You know, this I think it's just, you know, it frustrates me when we hear about protein and it's just sort of marketed at men or male, yes, sort of physiology. Yes. I think it's, you know, there's so much involved in protein. And again, in a female body with a menstrual cycle, it's like there's so much that protein can do for us that's not sort of generalized knowledge. You know, it's like these things should be also spoken about at school in terms of
absolutely.
How to build a meal that keeps you full, that, you know, supports your digestion, because yeah, it has that amazing ripple effect when you get it right, in terms of your whole life, short term and long term.
Particularly as we age, like we know that muscle loss after the age of 30 only increases. And so protein really helps to slow the age-related muscle loss and improve bone density. And particularly once you get to menopause, when your estrogen levels drop and estrogen is really protective for our bones and our muscles, we need to make sure that we've got infrastructure in place to support healthy aging. And this is one of the conversations we have with our menopausal women is we need to get the food right.
Yeah. It's not just about eating like birds. You know, we want to eat for our whole health. We want to feel good.
So for those interested in the Feel Good program, you can join anytime. It is all online. We have marketed it as a 4-week program, but you have lifetime access because life happens, things pop up, you get teething babies or, you know, stressful things, and that's life and that's fine. The whole idea of the Feel Good program is that it is there to support you no matter where you're at on your journey. There are specific recommendations if you're pregnant or breastfeeding or postpartum or perimenopausal or menopausal, so you can make those adaptations as you need and you can access the content whenever you need. So we'll pop a link in the show notes to access the Feel Good program, and you will, once you enter it, you will hear me say at several points, we want to hear from you, but we definitely want to hear from you. We want to hear your progress, what you are noticing when you make these changes to your protein. And most of all, we want to know that you're feeling good.
Well, we hope that this bite-sized protein episode has kept you satiated.
I'm not sure this is very bite-sized, but we did our best to keep this.
It's more like a full meal.
This is more like a, what's your puzzle analogy?
I need to work on my puzzle today.
I do too, yeah. Actually, yeah.
Mama's hungry. Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
If you liked it, leave us a review and follow us on socials. We'd love to hear from you.